Ete pancha dashanarta yarta mulam tanrinam tasmadanartam artakyam sheorti duratas chajet. So word by word synonyms. Sneham. Theft. Himsa. Violence. Anritam. Lying. Dambaha. Duplicity. Kamaha. Lust. Krodaha. Anger. Smayaha. Perplexity. Madaha. Pride. Vedaha. Disagreement. Vairam. Enmity. Avivashaha. Lack of faith. Samsparda. Rivalry. Yasinani. The dangers. Coming from women gambling and intoxication. And. Ete. These. Panchadasha. 15. Anartaha. Unwanted things. Indeed. Artamulaha. Based on wealth. Mataha. Are known. Rinam. By men. Tasmat. Therefore. Anartam. That which is undesirable. Artaakyam. Wealth spoken of as if desirable. Shreya arti. One who desires the ultimate benefit of life. Durataha. At a great distance. Jajet. Should leave. Translation. Theft, violence, speaking lies, duplicity, lust, anger, perplexity, pride, quarreling, enmity, faithlessness, envy, and the dangers caused by women, gambling, and intoxication are the 15 undesirable qualities that contaminate men because of greed for wealth. Although these qualities are undesirable, men falsely ascribe value to them. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life should therefore remain aloof from undesirable material wealth. So you can repeat. Theft, violence, speaking lies. Duplicity, lust, anger. Perplexity, pride. Quarreling, enmity. Faithlessness, envy. And the dangers caused by women. Gambling and intoxication. Are the 15 undesirable qualities. That contaminate men. Because of greed for wealth. Although these qualities are undesirable. Men falsely ascribe value to them. One desiring to achieve the real benefit of life, should therefore remain aloof from undesirable material wealth. So, purport by His Divine Grace. Actually, this is by Hridayananda Maharshi. Anyway, by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So the words... Anartam, aratakyam, or undesirable wealth, indicate wealth that cannot be efficiently engaged in the loving service of the Lord. Such superfluous money or property will undoubtedly pollute a man with all the above-mentioned qualities and therefore should be given up. Pretty heavy. So, Om Magana, Timidanda, Shah, Gananjana, Shlakaya, Chakshur, and Meditam, Gena, Tasmai, Shigurve, Namaha. So Queen Kunti states, Janmaishwarya Shutashashivim. Edamana Adapuman. She says different things actually intoxicate people. Not only wealth. She says having a so-called good birth that one's proud of. Of course, very few of us, other than Dr. Lakshmi, have good births in this world. Most of us were born in Malecha families, so we don't have that too much to be proud of. So, Janma Aishwarya, and then the wealth which is mentioned here, opulence. Aishwarya definitely means opulence more than just wealth. Shutasha, and that's interesting too. Shutasha means learning. When one is very, very intelligent, then also one becomes very proud and all these different bad qualities manifest as a result of that. Like this Digvijaya Pandit who was challenging everybody and in fact even challenged Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there was another one, of course, who challenged Sanatana Rupa Goswami. And he was later defeated by Srila Jiva Goswami. So that's Shutasha. So these are very dangerous things to have. And then Shrivir. Shrivir means like a beauty or handsomeness. I mean, for example, we were just reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas when he was 24 years old. And he was quite handsome. I mean, unimaginably handsome. And of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't fall into illusion. He's God. However, when he came in contact with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very worried about him and his sannyas status. He says, you've taken sannyas at a very young age and you're, not only that, he said, but you've taken sannyas in a lower sampradaya. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas in the, Bharti sampradaya. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was ready to give him sannyas again. This is actually an interesting story because generally you take sannyas from sannyasis. You don't take sannyas from grahasthas. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is an incarnation of Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods, and he was willing to like give Lord Chaitanya cloth again and reinitiate him into a higher sannyas sampradaya. Because the sannyasis, they have all these different sampradayas, lower and higher, and it, can you imagine the Mayavadis? They're supposed to be aloof, Brahma, Satya, Jagannitya. But still, they're so much attached to prestige. You know, what sort of sampradaya are you from? You know, prestige and position and things like that. It shows they're not actually detached from this world. Anyway, so he was very worried about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's beauty. That Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not be able to maintain his sannyas. So these things are very dangerous, particularly for those in the renounced order of life. As Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised Raghunath Das Goswami, when Raghunath Das Goswami asked him, what are the duties of those in the renounced order of life? And of course, Lord Chaitanya gave that instruction through Sarup Damodara Goswami, who was the Siksha Guru of Raghunath Das Goswami. And Lord Chaitanya said, that now that you are in the renounced order of life, you should not eat opulently, like Prabhupada said, and there's of course no other sannyasis here. Prabhupada said that the Mahaprasadam is for the grahasthas, not for the sannyasis. Although the tradition in ISKCON was you give the Mahaprasadam to the sannyasis. I remember when I first took sannyas in 1978, they would bring all the mahaplates to me. And I was thinking, this is very nice. Very nice. Of course, when I was visiting New Taliban, as a sannyasi, they didn't give me a single maha plate. There was a particular individual in charge of New Taliban who shall remain nameless, the unnamed one, who just basically ate all the sweets and he gave me some oat water or something like that. And also New Vrindavan was like that too, but New Vrindavan, I remember in 1972, the devotees would, for breakfast it was oat water, and they would take, not only the oats, there weren't oats for human beings, there were like horse oats. You remember this, of course. Not even the oats, just the water.
Oat water.
Oat water, yeah, not the oats itself, just the water that came from the oats. I guess they saved the oats to feed the horses or something. Or the cows. And that was breakfast, and then lunch was like pokeweed or something like that. You remember that? That's it. When I was in New Vrindavan in 72. It was interesting. But anyway, so it helped, it didn't actually help bring a sense of renunciation. It helped me learn how to steal Mahaprasadam. And even I would go into the Didi's garbage, because in the garbage, Didi's garbage generally considered offered. So there were the apple cores in there, and, you know, because the Didi's were eating nicely. And so I would eat. I'm sure Tapa Poon can relate to this one, but so I would just like go into the garbage and pick out, you know, things that were delectable. Instead of, oat water was just too much for me, and pokeweed was also too much for me. Fortunately, later, when it was the Bhagavad Dhamma discourses, I got to be Shrutakirti's assistant in the kitchen, and so I got a chance to get more nice prasadam. So Krishna saved me from that. Anyway. So Lord Chaitanya told Raghunath Das Goswami, now that you renounce the order of life, you should not eat opulent food. It's interesting. So in other words, sannyasis should really try to stay away from sweets. Because when you eat these things, vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udara pashta vegam, it agitates the senses. And if you eat too many sweets, you're going to want to get a sweetheart. That doesn't mean your heart becomes sweet. But you want to have a lady as a sweetheart. Anyway, so, and also Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you should not wear opulent clothes. That's why when I usually just wear cotton and not silk. Silk is also a product of violence. Even Ahimsa silk is not actually Ahimsa silk. So you should not wear opulent clothes, and you should not think of women even in dreams. Not even in dreams. Yeah, I mean, you think of the gopis if you happen to be a little bit transcendental. But otherwise, not even in dreams. Wow. And of course, Lord Chaitanya was very strict in that regard. He wouldn't even let the ladies come within 100 yards, because we're in America, of him. Yeah.
That's a football field.
That's a football field. You know, it's just like, anyway, so of course we don't. Prabhupada was not like that. Actually, Prabhupada even taught some of the ladies, Jadarani Prabhu, how to wear a sari. You know. So of course one has to be very, very careful. These things are very. And then he said you should think of Krishna in your heart of hearts 24 hours a day. So those are the injunctions for a sannyasi, one who wants to remain aloof from this material engagement. So it's not only wealth; it's these other things. Of course, in order to enjoy the other things, you need wealth, or you use the other things to acquire wealth. You use your knowledge to acquire wealth, or you use your beauty, so-called beauty, to acquire wealth. You know, what's the beauty of this body anyway? Or your good birth to acquire wealth. I mean, all these different things you use to acquire wealth. And it's interesting that wealth, or having money, is necessary to enjoy those other things. And not only necessary to enjoy those other things, it makes you more attached to these other things. And sometimes they even say money is the root of all evil. And of course in Kali Yuga, wealth, or having wealth that's not engaged in Krishna's service, is a symptom or manifestation of Kali, the personality of Kali, or quarrel. And I mean, for example, in the Gaudiya Math, Before Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, left this world, they purchased a temple, the Bhag Bazar Math. They constructed a temple in Calcutta. Previously, they were just living in rented properties. But then when they started to get this opulent building, the Bhag Bazar Math, and then the devotees started fighting over who would have what room. It's interesting. So much politics came into play just because they had more opulence, even in the Krishna consciousness movement, the Gaudiya Math. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented upon hearing this and understanding this, and he said to Prabhupada that if you ever get any money, distribute books. And he said, if I could sell the marble for my temples, for the temple, I would use it to print and distribute books, which is interesting. You know, Prabhupada took that as one of his, like, primary objectives in life. Of course, he did construct temples for preaching Krishna consciousness. However, sometimes you see when you construct a temple, the preaching diminishes, which is really interesting, and the politics increase. I mean, for example, in Vrindavan, when they constructed the Vrindavan temple and the Gurukula there, then all the devotees, they wanted to become managers and have a room in the Gurukula building. So there were so many people want to be managers, you know, managers of prasada, managers of this, and everyone wanted an office, and there wasn't going to be any room for children in the Gurukula building. The Prabhupada said, you know, so many managers, and there's no one to manage, you know, too many chiefs and not enough Indians, as they say. So, you know, even in ISKCON, that dynamic has occurred. And I've seen that. I mean, for example, one of the places in my zone is Fiji. And we just opened a temple about 10 years ago in Suva, a mammoth temple, beautiful temple. And previously we were just living in like a shack. We had a shack for preaching or preaching different people's homes. And we were actually making more devotees when we were preaching out of a shack. It was basically with a tin roof on it. Of course, the weather there is always good. It's not like here in New Taliban. But there were some austerities in the shack, too, that, for example, there were bees there. So every time you sat to give a class, the bees would, and they were biting bees. They weren't sweet honeybees. They were angry bees. The bees would actually just like hover over. Every time you had a garland, the bees would be hovering around you. And it was austere, but we made so many devotees because the people were much more personal then. In other words, you were preaching in people's homes, so that was much more personal in a warm environment. And everyone participated in the Sunday feast, cooking and serving. Everyone had a nice serving attitude. And then as soon as we built this temple, everything became very sophisticated. And people wanted to be in charge of different departments, needed a full-time treasurer to manage the money, and the preaching went down. And the Sunday feast, you know, basically the devotees started coming to the Sunday feast just to eat prasadam, and they wouldn't even serve the guests. The guests actually basically had to serve themselves. A lot of guests were coming. We have about 500 guests every Sunday because it's a very Krishna-conscious place. And so the devotees, they would just like go in front in line, and the guests would have to be back in line if there was a line, if the guests didn't have to serve. And the devotees would, you know, eat all the tasty prasadam. So when I saw that, I forbade the devotees from eating first, and I made the devotees serve, and I actually served myself just to show the devotees what they should do. And everyone liked that. And I said, when you serve, you should smile at the people. Because previously, when they were serving, when I forced them to serve, they were scowling at the people. You know, I said, why do I have to do this? Serving, you know, because it's a very hierarchical society, Indian society. So people don't really want to consider themselves servants, especially if they're born in a so-called Brahmin family or even a Vaishya family or something like that. And they say, I'm not a servant. We used to hire people for that. Isn't that like that in India? We used to hire people.
Very
so
hard, yes.
This is very hard to get people from a hierarchical culture, you know, where you have, you know, a high position, you look down on other people, and they don't realize that Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasanu Das. They don't realize that we're servants of a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. Everyone wants to be the master, make their way up the hierarchy. So anyway, so I had to force the Buddha and said, you must smile when you're serving prasadam. Smile at the guests and say, thank you for coming. And they said, what? How can we do that? I said, don't serve them as a matter of duty, serve them as a matter of happiness. They're coming to Krishna. This is your home, the temple. You're initiated devotees. This is your home. When a guest comes to your home, if you look at them, With the staring eyes, the vultures of hell will pluck your eyeballs out. And that got them going. Because sometimes in Indian culture, you got to motivate people by fear. Isn't it? I mean, like the demigod worship, everything. People worship even because of fear. It's interesting. Why do people worship the demigods? Because of fear or lust. That's why. Because they're afraid if they don't worship them, they'll get punished, like Indra trying to kill the residents of Vrindavan. And if they don't worship them, they won't get what they want. So it's all lust and fear. That's why we don't like demigod worship so much. If you respect the demigods as devotees, that's another thing. But it's all lust and fear. Greed. Just greed. So anyway, so I told them that, you know, that the vultures of hell pluck your eyeballs out, so you better smile. So they began to smile. And then I explained philosophically, you know, we should be so happy. That's what we're here for. And took a little preaching. Eventually, they got into it. I mean, the men are the hardest. The women actually naturally have good hospitality. The men in the Indian culture, they just want to be served. You know, where's my food? You know, like you see in the prison house, you know, they just slam their knives and forks on the table. We want food. We want food. The men, it's interesting. I mean, not criticism of...
It's
a chauvinism. A lot of chauvinism in Indian culture. And the wife has to just like serve, and if there's anything left over after the man eats, then she gets to eat. And if the chapati is not exactly round, he throws it back at her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she
That's
knows.
That's why I didn't marry an Indian second time around.
Yeah, you're more intelligent.
My Guru Maharaj said, nice Indian man. I said, no, Maharaj. I don't like Indian men.
Yeah, because it's very chauvinistic. Not all Indian men, but... But it's a very prominent thing in India, the chauvinism. So anyway, so it was, the women, it was easy to get them to convince them to serve, but the men, it was like twisting their arms behind their backs. And finally they agreed to do it. When I was there, of course, when I leave, you know, when the cat's away, the men will play. So, but this opulence really does that to you. When you have something, you become so proud, or a position in society, or you're a man, you know, just talking about chauvinism, we're men. You know, we can be prouder. Isn't it? And if you don't
like America, white man.
Yeah, white man. You know, it's just like all this prestige and power, position, money that really makes you demoniac. And you know, actually the way women are treated, even in America, but to a large extent in third world countries like India and China. I mean, like, what they do, now they have this selective abortion. You know about that. That they have these trucks with ultrasound machines. They go around to the different villages. You know about this. And they see what sort of child the woman has in her womb. And if it's a girl, they abort it.
In China
and India.
And India.
So you have the ratio between men and women is skewed. That means you have like 10 men to each woman in India. And then the women, because you have to sell the women, you know, because there's a high price for them. Anyway, it even increases the chauvinism. Just because of this idea of position, you know, we're men. Everyone wants to think like that, you know, that we're better than someone else. Like even devotees, we think we're better than the karmis. You hear that sometimes. And you're like, oh, you're just a karmi, meat eater, malacha, dog. Whatever. We have so many nice words for people we want to lord it over, right? We can actually do an exercise, you know, I'm not saying we should do it. We should do it on a flip chart, you know, all the nice words we have for people that we think are lesser than us. You know, like the men are thinking like, less intelligent women, Maya baby. Right? And the devotees are thinking, latches, karmis, dogs, morons. I mean, we got thousands of words. You know, derogatory words. Just because of this attachment to position. Or you know, so it's wealth, all these different things. So what I'm trying to explain is it's not just money. It's all these things that in our little tiny brains give us the impression that we have some superiority over others. Or, you know, even sannyasis, you know, sannyasi, bow down, mister, as Boy George says, you know. You know, sannyasi, blessings, guru, and all these things. I mean, if you happen to be a devotee, these things really cause an arthas in your heart. This is mentioned here in this verse. Pachadasa anartha. So anartha means unwanted things. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that one of the sources of anarthas are the byproducts of bhakti, which is really interesting. I mean, it's easy to know to understand the other sources of anarthas, like sins, or even pious activities, because, you know, they put you in the mode of goodness, which is bewildering. Sins, pious activities, or offenses. I mean, that's easy to understand why those cause anarthas. But to understand why bhakti causes anarthas, or the byproducts of bhakti, it's harder. And the reason being is that as one performs bhakti, one gets certain things that make one prouder. Like even the ecstasy makes you proud. You know, I'm in ecstasy. The rest of you are not in ecstasy. I'm a sannyasi. Or I mean, what to speak of you have a position of guru where people are just saying nice things about you all the time to your face. Of course, bad things are behind your back. But that's why we have webcams in everybody's room. Spies. So, you know, there's people say nice things. They write a book about you every year, how nice you are. Can you imagine having a book written, like as big as the Bhagavad Gita about you, the Me Gita, every year, with pictures of yourself, you know. Can you imagine what that does to you? Yo, here's a picture of me with my lotus feet. Here's a picture of me with my lotus sika. Oh, they got the wrong profile on this picture. My nose isn't actually that big. So I have to hire a public relations man. So the point is that all these things cause anarthas. You know, Janmai Shraya Shrutasya Shibir. And of course, as Lord Chaitanya says, dhanam janam sundarim, those also were very dangerous. Wealth is, that's also mentioned by Lord Chaitanya. Dhanam janam and garlands, dried flowers. So, dhanam janam, followers, and sundarim. Beautiful girls. I mean, sometimes you see sannyasis, even, you know, on parikrama, followed by like a whole horde of attractive young girls. You know, you go to Govardhan and you see some sannyasi on parikrama. I mean, sometimes it happens to me too. So they're followed by 10,000 young girls. So these things are all very, very dangerous. So, of course, for preaching Krishna consciousness, but still we have to be extremely careful of these things. And if one is not engaged direct preaching, even if one is engaged in direct preaching, one has to be extremely cautious in dealing with these things and have very good sadhana to avoid deviating from the norms of Krishna consciousness. But if one is not preaching, then you should follow the path of Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami, he basically ate such simple food. I mean, who can describe what he was eating ultimately? Just like the rice that was rejected by the cows. It was thrown out from Lord Jagannath's kitchen. He was putting some salt on it, washing it with a little water. And that was it. And Raghunath Das Goswami didn't accept even the money that his parents were sending him for Krishna's service. Originally, his parents were sending him money. And he, with that money, he was using it to entertain Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, what could be nicer than that? But ultimately, He gave that up, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that was very good because that would have contaminated the mind, accepting money from a materialist. In other words, we do accept money from materialists, but for Krishna's service. And if we misuse that money or use it for ourselves, misspend it, then it's very, very sinful. I mean, even legally, let's say if you're in charge of a temple, it's considered legally public money. You know, 501c3 corporation. If it's spent on it for yourself to buy things for yourself, I mean, other than, you know, you may need a pair of socks or something for serving Krishna, then it's very sinful. It's actually illegal if you start doing things like that. So devotees have to be very, very cautious when they're preaching Krishna consciousness because, otherwise they should remain like, Raghunath Das Goswami. Even rejecting the wealth from his parents in the service of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
When did he make that switch, Guru Maharaj, if you can just explain?
Well, he was accepting it. I mean, basically he was undergoing, let's say, more and more severe renunciation. First, he came to Jagannath Puri and then he was taking the Mahaprasadam remnants from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then, after that, he was begging at the Singhadwara gate of the Jagannath temple. After that, he thought, well, this pollutes the mind to be begging, because when you're begging, you're actually looking at people thinking, oh, he gave yesterday, he'll give today, he's a nice guy, he's a horrible guy, just because of the way people react with money. I mean, you see this in Vrindavan with the pandas. I was just in Vrindavan and Govardhan. That the pandas, they're basically out, many of them are out after money. And sometimes if you don't give them money, they'll pull on your dhoti or sari to pull you back and harass you. And, you know, some pilgrimage places, when we take the devotees there, we say, just offer obeisances before you go there. And just, I'll explain it before you go and we're going to run through the place. Because the pandas are just like, give. I'm a Brahmin. And of course, if I'm alone, it's not a problem because they usually don't bother me. I just if they say they're a Brahmin, I tell them, I'm a sannyasi, you're supposed to give to me. And then they run away. So Raghunath Das Goswami didn't want to beg. So ultimately, not ultimately, but the next step was that he actually went to the soup kitchen, you know, the free kitchen. And then the next step was, he started eating this rice that was rejected by the cows from Tailinga at the outside of the kitchen. And so that was his renunciation, but then he was still entertaining Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the money that was being sent by his parents, who were very wealthy. They had opulence like Indra, and so they wanted to entangle him in this way. And Prabhupada said, when you accept that, it contaminates the mind. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that. It contaminates the mind. So, ultimately, he gave that up too, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with that. And then Raghunath Das Goswami, he is the acharya of the highest aspect of Krishna consciousness, prayojana. Prayojana means the goal, Krishna prema. You have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And so he's our Prayojana Acharya. And so if one is not preaching, then one should be like that. If one is preaching, doing practical service for Prabhupada's movement, then we can accept these things, but be very cautious in the meantime. As I mentioned the examples, and I can give so many examples of what happened in our movement. I mean, in Hawaii, for example, you had one devotee who was in charge of the temple and he thought the temple property was his after a while and he sold the temple and he kept the money.
Really?
Yeah. That was Gaurasundar. He kept the money. He kept it as his property. So we find this. Even happens in ISKCON, or, you know, temple president happens to, you know, fall in love with some brahmacharini. Or, you know, even here, even not present people, but even here, New Taliban, you had someone who was, trying to to get on with different women who weren't his wives, weren't his wife. You know, you had temple presidents who wanted many wives. Prabhupada said, our business is to reduce this entanglement, not to increase it. And there was one devotee who wanted to have several wives, not here in Utala, who asked Prabhupada for permission. He said, our business is to reduce. Your business is to increase. You can't even come to the temple. Prabhupada was so heavy with that. So you see, even like leaders in the movement, sannyasis, I mean, you've seen so many fall downs in our society, right? And it's all due to this, you know, money, wealth, women, prestige, all these things like this that create anarthas, unwanted things, contaminate the mind. So it's a very dangerous world in that respect. Not only padam padam yad vi padam natesham, it's danger for the body, it's danger for the mind, it's danger for the soul. So, anyway, so these are some of the points from this particular verse. Any questions or comments? I mean, I had more to say, but this is, and I'll speak more tomorrow about wealth in particular. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I just have one example. I was in Los Angeles years ago, and there was a gentleman, nice young boy, who was heading up the whole cookie production. It was huge back then. Mm. And so they sent him a lot of responsibility. They sent him to pick up a new van. And what they said was, he obviously signed his name, or I guess the dealership told them what happened. Yeah. He signed his name and the ownership, and he disappeared. He didn't come back with a brand new van.
Shoo. Oh, my God.
There goes a brand new devotee with a brand new van.
Just like, I mean, even Yogendra, you were telling me the story about how your son was last year, he was doing this calendar club, and he hired someone for it, and the person took the money.
Yeah, the person...
Not a devotee.
Deposit, and he went and bought a bunch of cocaine and had a party with his friends.
Wow. I wonder if the whole issue of wealth and misspending like that, as it relates to a mandate for a potential community to be a farm community, embrace a farm lifestyle,
right.
Rural lifestyle. Maybe not now, unless you want to, but it seems that the whole misuse and abuse of the Yukta Vairagya principle plays very heavily into that. So that the Yukta Vairagya becomes like this magic wand where you can rationalize spending money on things that have absolutely nothing to do with developing the skill set or recognizing what Krishna has provided locally.
Right.
Because you're thinking, our job is to get money, predominantly from Indian donors, go outside and then take that money and do things outside. So instead of the wealth being generated by recognizing what Krishna has provided locally, it's everything going out like that. So you don't develop culture.
That's a good point. I mean, one of the reasons why in America, one of the many reasons why in America we don't have so many, we're not making as many Western devotees, is that the focus tends to be on getting money from the Indian people. Because, you know, where there's money, you know, people are naturally going to be interested. And the Western people generally don't give as much money. They're not as generous like that. So, I mean, what did they say, a low-hanging fruit? To use a vegetable fruit analogy, you know, because you're into agriculture. So,
preaching
to people from India. I mean, I'd love to do that, and I spend a lot of time doing it. I mean, obviously, but it's much easier than preaching to people from the West. That means that, like, if you're picking fruit from a tree, the first fruit you're going to pick is the fruit that you can actually reach. I mean, if you try the fruit that's high, you're going to have to get a cherry picker or a ladder. You don't want to fall from a ladder, of course. It's much harder. So preaching to people who can give donations very easily is very, you know, it's easy. You know, if I go up to a Westerner and say, you know, we'll do a Satya Narayan Katha for you, he'll say, what the hell are you talking about, man? You know. And I said, well, we only charge $100 or $200 for it. He said, what? Get out of here. But if you go, you know, if I go to a person from India, you know, I say, I'm going to do a satchin, you know, it's a sannyasi especially. I can go anywhere and say, I'm going to do a satchin Ryan Kata. And I can just pretty much charge anything I want. And then, bingo. It's like playing bingo and winning. So there's that tendency to actually forget our mission. It's called mission drift. That's a technical name. Because of being attracted to money or things like that. And then, I mean, as far as like farming and everything like that, the devotees, even if the vegetables are growing there, rather than picking the vegetables, they'd rather go to the supermarket. I mean, I saw an interesting story about that in Fiji, where everything grows naturally, basically. It's a beautiful climate. One time I was on one island, and the plane was delayed, and it was breakfast time, and it was Sunday. And the devotee said, well, we really apologize, it's Sunday, because all the supermarkets are closed, and we can't give you breakfast. And, you know, this is in a tropical island. So then I pointed out a tree. I said, what is that thing over there? They said, that's a banana tree. I said, what grows on a banana tree? And they said, bananas. I said, pick one. Pick a few. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. And then they say, one picks. And I said, what's that? A papaya tree. What grows on a papaya tree? Papayas. Oh, pick it. Okay. What grows on that? There were nut trees. I mean, and you get the idea. Pineapples. Everything growing wild. And they didn't even think about that. They just thought, you know, the food grows in supermarkets. And this is in a tropical place where, anyway, and they're still going to the supermarket because it's a lot easier than picking it from the tree. They'd rather make the money, and which is ridiculous. And I've seen that even in America, in our community in North Carolina, when we grow vegetables there, the devotees would rather just go to the market and buy rather than pick it. They just don't have the time to pick it. Or flowers, for example. It turns out to be the same thing. I mean, I don't know if you have that problem here.
You don't buy flowers.
That's good.
Except for the festival.
Well, that's good. So the point is, yeah, we become diverted from the focus because of this, you know, because of money. It diverts us from the focus. I mean, we'd be better. In many cases, I'm not saying all cases, in many cases, it'd be better not to have so much money and just have to learn how to live. I mean, too little money is not that good. I mean, I remember, the first time I went to New Vrindavan, another New Vrindavan story, it was cold, and people had to bathe at the stream, take a plastic milk bucket and chip the ice away and pour it over the, you remember that? And then, you know, I went there, and it was like 3:30 in the morning or something like that before Mangalarti. I'm freezing to death. And then right before me, there was another person who was the person in charge of the community. I won't mention name. And he said, this is so ecstatic. I was thinking, that's your idea of ecstasy. I'm in the wrong moment. You know, pouring cold water on yourself and screaming bloody murder as you're freezing to death. So, I mean, you know, we do need a certain amount of, we do need a little heat. I mean, even in my room, I ran a heater last night, so I moved the deities into my bedroom so they'll have heat too, because I have deities with me. And so, anyway, you know, a certain amount of material opulence is necessary. We're not supposed to be wretched. Also, for preaching, like Prabhupada did want us to have, you know, some opulence. Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he went to Radhakund in a Rolls Royce, you know, which is interesting, just to show that Babaji's, they were on the wrong track. Not that we should all get Rolls Royces. So for preaching, yes, but one has to be very, very careful not to have this mission drift, as you mentioned, and it happens. We drift from the mission. So, yeah.
All right, just one point. We're talking about, like, all the names we have for karmis, sometimes the way we deal with them. One time I was talking to one of my god sisters, and they were saying, you know, the difficulties in dealing and, you know, with devotees in different situations and things. And so I just made a relatively light comment that, well, you know, it's difficult because, you know, you're dealing with devotees and, you know, you have to be so careful because they, you know, servants of Krishna, you know, for myself, you know, I'm always dealing with karmis, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Well, right after that, Krishna let me suffer months.
Wow.
You know, having to reestablish a relationships with my department that I work in at work. You know, it was nothing really happened that I did, but it was somebody, I don't know, she was going out the door and she did not like me so much. And she started these rumors. And before long, everybody in my department, you know, had like an attitude about me.
Wow.
And I had to humbly let go and like inquire, what is the problem? You know, and rebuild the relationships, you know, because, you know, I was just taking it so lightly, you know, that these are just karmis, you know, instead of eternal spirit souls, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, have eternal relationship with them. And so it was good for me because then I shifted completely. I mean, I always try to be a nice guy, but, you know, we always make mistakes. But, so now I'm very careful, you know, I bring them prasadam, you know, and you know, just try to do everything, you know, when I deal with them, try to deal with them, just like I'm dealing with any other spirit soul devotee, you know, with so much care and attention.
That's nice. Yeah, because they are devotees, they just forgot. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a devotee. And they've just, so I don't even use that word karmi anymore with people. Yeah, it's passé. We just, you know, they were all brothers and sisters. That's a very good point you made, and Krishna definitely taught you an interesting lesson about that. So, we don't want to use derogatory terms with anybody because it really separates us from them.
Unfortunately, sometimes though is like, someone comes to the temple and we'll go out of our way to befriend that person, be very hospitable, gracious. But then the person that we've been serving with for 25, 30 years, because we have some history and, you know, they betrayed us or, you know, I'm talking about myself. And then we're not so, you know, very considerate of the devotee.
Yeah, that's true. We develop an attitude towards certain people because we've had long-term relationships with them. I mean, even statistically, most violence or murders occur in the home. It's interesting. It's more dangerous to come home and say hello to your people at home than to go to Harlem in New York, statistically. Yeah, it's very, most violence occurs because, why? Because people are frustrated, because their lust, anger, greed is not satisfied, and it turns into violence. Because you actually get more angry with people who are close to you than people who are far away from you. Or if you get angry with someone who's not, you're not familiar with, it just lasts for a second. Like someone cuts you off when you're driving a car, and you get angry, oh, you rascal. But you're not thinking of that person over and over again. But as far as someone in your family or some other devotee or whatever who you developed an attitude towards, you're just like living with that person 24 hours a day in your mind. All right. Is there any other questions before we break? Okay. Well, today we're going out to visit people in various places, the restaurants, the boats, a boat. And
you wanted to show something, and maybe, I don't know if you have time this evening.
Probably not this evening. I'm going out all day long. I'll be pretty exhausted at the end of the day.
Okay. This evening, we'll figure out a time for that.
Yeah, we'll figure out a time, but this evening is just, you know, running around all day long in a little tiny car with Yogi driving, so. I'm going to be pretty exhausted. We got a lot to do. All right, so anyway, and then we're going to be taking a tour of the garden or the potential garden.
Yeah.
What's that, Saturday?
Yeah.
Is it an inside tour or is it an outside tour?
You have an inside garden?
compared to the
planning room.
Oh, the planning room, yeah.
It's come to Blue Boy.
Yeah, we're going to go to Blue Boy on Sunday. Sunday evening. Sunday evening we're going to Blue Boy. And he has everything scheduled out. Okay. I just serve him.
But I may have missed somebody, you know, people still coming to me saying, you know, about this or that, so then I try to fit it in, you know.
We're going to Nandasutta's place. What day?
Sunday. Oh, so, Sunday. So that's probably all we got time for in the evening. You know, there's Joy and Blue Boy and Nandasutta's place. And that's probably...
Yeah, that's all we're going to have time. You know, Sunday feast program and everything like that. Yes, that's all we'll have time for. Anyway, guess that's it. All glories to His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.